Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going on since 1982 and still going on. As always, I want to remind people that if you have any mailbag questions and you can't get onto the radio the net itself, or if you have any topics you would like to hear covered, or if you have any puzzles you'd like to offer me, or you disagree with something that someone said, as long as you can cite references, or if you want me to kind of tap Paul on the back, WS2N, and tell him that you'd like him to take a look at a website or a YouTube video and make a comment. The email address to reach us is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. There will be links to different link sites on my link page. Right now, there's a link to the famous Berkeley Impedance Matching Calculator website, and there may be others that will join it as the night progresses, and you can get to that by just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. There is a chat room. It was very active last week, and hopefully will be active again. You can get there directly by just typing into your browser the word chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll take you to the chat room. And as I've mentioned before, if someone needs to stream this via the internet, if they can't do it via Echolink or IRLP or locally with a radio, I stream it on the internet. You just have to type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and you can hear it play. And as always, I like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a archival site, a website called amateurradio.tv, that has archived the technical net since September of 2006. So when you have a chance, please take a look at it and listen to a couple of them. They are full of very useful information. So let me drop for a second. Okay, as always, what we're going to do is I will ask if anyone has any questions of a technical nature and put them on the list, and we'll go down the list. And somewhere between 8:30 and at 9 o'clock, Andy, WA2CDL, will be joining us for Andy's Corner, and tonight's discussion will be about impedance matching, which should be interesting. And when Andy's Corner is over, we'll entertain any further questions, and then the space report. So it'll be like it was last week. So on that note, let me drop one more time. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS with the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has any questions of a technical nature tonight, or any topics they would like to discuss or statements they'd like to make of a technical nature, please give me your call sign and your first name.
82OGB and yes.
Okay, Craig recognized emphatically. Anyone else want to put their name on the list tonight? Give me your first name and your call sign.
Interesting. Just a question. The chart is ac2gs.com, but it takes me to King's County Radio Club.
The chat room should be the word chat.ac2gs.com. It doesn't take you to the right place?
It takes me to King's County Radio Club. And then is KCRC chat that it requires logging.
Okay, somehow you're in the wrong place. Let me just take a quick look on my web browser, and I'll get right back to the net in less than a minute. Okay, I don't know what to tell you. I typed in chat.ac2gs.com. It forwarded me to a chat seat, which is the chat room technology that we use. It says, welcome to Limark Technical Net, and it asked me to log in.
Okay. Yes, I did exactly what you told me. It's TechNet. On the left-hand side corner, it says Chatzy, C-H-A-T-Z-Y. And then your name, alias, whatever. So what I need to do is, and there are rooms, a little bit more how to get there or log in. Do I have to be logged?
Yeah, I think you have to sign up if you don't have an account, but it's a painless, free thing. It's up to you, but you have to sign up if you don't have an identity. So once you do that, you just go into the Limark TechNet room and you're there.
Thank you very much.
Okay, very good, Wes. It seems to be active, at least at first. We have 8 other people. That's a busy chat room. Thank you all for attending. Unfortunately, I can't kind of entertain you too much during my portion of the net, but I will go there and make my comments as time permits. So thanks a lot. So once again, let me just ask if there's anyone out there with any questions of a technical nature that they would be like to be put on the list. Give me your call sign and your first name. Okay, very well. We will start obviously with Craig, and you're very enthusiastic tonight. So I'm looking forward to your question or your topic tonight, Craig.
Craig, hi. Antennas,
Okay, unfortunately, your mic gain is a little on the low side, so if you could raise your mic gain, that would be good, and I wasn't able to catch your call sign. What's your call sign and your name, sir?
Okay, the call is King Bravo 2 Alpha Golf Papa John, and that was a question about different type of FM, whether it be amateur radio or commercial type business. What designates the design of antenna that they use in particular between, let's say, 160 up to 161 or 156 up to 160 in that type of area? Over.
Okay, John, you're second on our list. We take people in order. So I put you a second on the list, and we'll talk FM antennas. Craig was very enthusiastic that he had a question. So what's your question, Craig?
K82OGB. Has to do with my battery tower hooked up with my computer tower. A couple nights ago when we had a very nasty thunderstorm, I shut power and it immediately switched over to battery, which is what it's supposed to do. And it says it's got like 340 minutes left and everything's hooked up, everything's running fine. And my computer is completely off other than the monitors being on, and then they shut off. Around 10 to 15 minutes later, the battery all of a sudden just shuts off on its own after getting down to like 90%. And I turn it back on, and it still has plenty of power left. What's up with that?
Okay, so you're talking about a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply, I would assume. It's most of them are powered by lead-acid cell batteries. They have kind of a wishy-washy life, depending upon how new they are. Usually lead-acid, you can rely on them for 2 years. You might be able to stretch them a little bit longer. It's curious the way you're presenting it. It sounds as though something, some safety circuit in the UPS decided to shut itself down. With lead-acid batteries, I tend to think the worst of them, and it's very possible that their capacity is illusion based upon the electronics of the electrical engineer who built the UPS. And it may be on its last legs. A lot of UPSs, mine I know, does a routine charge-discharge test every so often, like once a month, and when it fails, it blares up a noisy alarm. I don't know if that's 100% with the other UPSs, but are you absolutely sure that the battery has a good complete charge in it, that it hasn't kind of seen better days?
I've only had the thing for about 2 months. I got it about 2 weeks before railroad, and it says to plug it in for at least 8 to 10 hours to give it a complete charge, which I did, and then I plugged everything into it and tested it out, and it works fine. As a matter of fact, if I unplug it, computer's still running, and everything's running fine.
Okay, so if you unplug the UPS, it runs fine. If you press the little emergency button to switch it over to the lead acid power, that's when it fails almost immediately?
Well, my computer was off when I did this. As soon as I saw lightning out there, I unplugged the battery, and then I start hearing a little buzzer in it, like a very faint buzzer, and then around 10 to 15 minutes, when it gets down to about 92%, it shuts off. And my computer is not running, so that gives it more time. But with my computer running, as soon as I shut it off, with my computer running and I unplug the battery, it says it's got like 45 to 50 minutes on it, but I leave it in there for like maybe 20 to 30 minutes, and it hasn't even used that much power. But say, for example, if my computer was off and I unplug it, and I leave it in battery mode, it'll shut itself off around 10 minutes later, and then when I turn it back on, it's still full of power.
Okay, I'm kind of losing the details. As far as, let's just kind of simplify it for my sake. You will basically unplug it. In both cases, you unplug it with the computer powered down, so it's not really powering much of anything, and it lasts for X number of minutes before it turns itself off, versus your computer is on and you unplug it and it lasts for Y number of minutes until it just kind of shuts itself off. So what are the number of minutes when it doesn't have much of a load versus the number of minutes when it does have a load?
When it has a load, it's got about 40 to 50 minutes on it, and it bounces in between, like, between 40 to 50, like, every 5 seconds, versus without a load, it's got...
Okay, the second half, you dropped out completely of the repeater, so I didn't hear the second half of that at all.
If I unplug it with the computer off, it's around 340 minutes of standby time versus with the computer running, it's about 50 minutes or so. And as it runs on battery power, it switches over the second I unplug it. So there's no gap in between. But, yeah, it shuts off around 10 minutes of it being on battery power with the computer not running, despite the fact there's not any kind of load on it.
Okay, so my other question is, have you ever tried unplugging it when there was a load on the computer? Because what the first two numbers you're telling me are estimates that it's basing upon the power use in the circuit. It's sensing the amount of watts being used. It has an algorithm of how much power it expects to be in a fully charged battery, and it's doing a calculation based on theoreticals. So my question is, have you tried to unplug your UPS while your computer was running and time how long it takes for it to die?
I just unplugged it, and it says 43 minutes, and the power percentage is at 100.
Okay, that's not quite the most important part of this, because as I mentioned before, what's probably going on in the UPS is it has a set of algorithms. It has an assumption of what usable watt hours of the battery are, and it can read the power usage going out of the UPS. So it's doing a simple calculation. The question will be how long it takes before the bottom falls out of your UPS. And again, this could either be some malfunction of the electronic circuitry, or it may be as simple as you might have bought the UPS recently, but it might have sat on some store shelf for years, and the lead acid, the cells, might be under specs by this time.
WB2EAZ.
Yes, Ed.
I think the two of you are talking past each other. It sounds to me, from what Craig is saying, when the unit has no load, it shuts off after 10 minutes. I suspect the unit is designed specifically to not discharge the battery. If you just leave it on, you put it away for a week, turned on, after 10 minutes it shuts off automatically. But once there's any load detected, it works normally. That's what I think I'm hearing. Back to Roy.
Yeah, West recognized. Well, Ed, it's possible. I am not aware of UPSs being quite that smart. You could be right. I don't know. I've never actually tried that. I've always had something hooked into my UPS, so it's never been in a state where I could just unplug it without any load and see if it has that interesting power-saving feature. So that would be curious to find out if that's one of the specs given in a UPS. Yes, please comment.
I'm going to read a couple of numbers here, Roy. I want you to see if maybe they mean anything, but they probably don't. Right now my computer is on, and the tower, by the way, it's cyber power. The tower is running in the battery. So it's still at 100%. It's got 46 minutes, 0 voltage, 0 hertz. 120 volts, I guess, 0.0 hertz, 0.171 kW, 185 VA, 1.6 amps, and 19 kW percent, and then 12 VA percent. Does that mean anything to you?
Well, my assumption is it's a lot of the numbers that it's sensing. It's sensing what kind of power you're putting in. Since you've unplugged it, it's reading 0 volts and 0 amps going in through the AC line. Then it's reporting how much it's supplying to your computer in terms of voltages and currents and watt hours and such. So that's what I would assume a lot of those numbers are related to.
What is the manufacturer and the model number?
Craig, did you hear that? Wesley wanted to know the manufacturer of the UPS and the model number.
Cyber Power, I have the 1500 VA AVR.
Is that the manufacturer model number, 1500 VA AVR?
Come on, I'm going to look this up.
in the rear of the UPS is supposed to be a label saying the model number.
Okay, I have the Cyber Power CP1500 AVRLCD Intelligent LCD UPS System. 1500 VA, 900 watts.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take it out.
Anything else, Roy? KD2OGB, back to net control.
Okay, well, as I mentioned, Craig, the number outputs are giving you most likely your input, your output, and probably your calculated storage capacity of your battery. That would make the most sense to me. I have quickly gone on to the page that describes it, and I'm kind of trying to look to see if it has that interesting 5-minute safety feature where it powers itself down and spares its lead acid cell batteries. I would assume if it does have something like that, it might have some bypass or a button that you can disable that charming feature. But I'm going to take a quick look through the page as I talk and listen. Yeah, someone out there, about 50% noise. You have a suggestion? Did you hear that, Craig? The suggestion was to monitor the voltage in the cell while this is going on and seeing what exactly is going on with that.
I'll probably look at my manual maybe to see if there's something that has to do with this energy saving thing, but yeah, I'll consider that. Let me just go through my numbers again. Still says 46 minutes. It keeps jumping 46, 49, 42, 46 minutes. It keeps jumping around. 0 volts because I don't have it plugged in. It says it's providing 120 volts to all the other things, and it's only at maybe like 19, 20% capacity on the load here.
Yes, Wesley.
What it says here is automatic voltage regulation AVR that corrects minor power fluctuation without switching to battery power with extended battery life. So that means that those power fluctuations are made bypassing the battery, so the battery is not taking any role in that. So the AVR feature is essential in areas where the power fluctuations occur frequently. When you were talking about the load, I didn't understand it properly, but maybe Dr. Roy may put things together. It looks like whenever you have a real load, which would be whatever the load is, computer, then there is no battery involvement in it. And by that, the level of the battery is shown differently than the level of the battery when the load is disconnected. Intuition.
KC2FYJ comment.
Yes, Harry.
Assuming I'm on the right web page, under the specs for that unit on the battery section, it says runtime at full load 3 minutes, runtime at half load 12 minutes. So it's quite possible that what he's seeing in terms of behavior when it's under load is absolutely appropriate.
WB2EAV.
Yes, Ed.
The unit is obviously rated 1500 VA, which is basically 1500 watts. If you want, I can get to the differences, but it's no big deal. Those numbers are, full load is 1500 watts. That's 1.5 kilowatts. That's one hell of a load. Half power, you get more time. But Craig is nowhere near running at those numbers.
Roger, but it's 900 watts, by the way. It's 1500 VA, 900 watts.
All right, what I said still holds. A typical computer will take 100 watts.
Yeah, and it depends from how, what is the average, what is the current during per time period. So it's not 1500 volt amp, it's 900 watts. And then depends from the current. Put the current twice more, you don't have 12 minutes, you have only 6 minutes. And divide, then you have a 3 minutes divided by 2, you have 1.5 minutes. That's the runtime. And to exchange.
Well, you know, it's a theoretical limit based upon a total amount for the load. It's not really designed specifically for Craig's computer to be the full load. It's a rough approximation, and for some odd reason, they don't give those types of numbers. Instead of it going, the half load being twice as long in duration as a full load, it's 4 times as long. So there seems to be somehow a square relationship. And the bottom line ultimately is how long he can keep the computer on before it powers itself down, whether the battery is malfunctioning, there's a circuit malfunction, or there's a safety feature. I think it's being overly optimistic about the amount of duration he can keep the computer operational. Because it sounds like they give specs for something like 40 minutes, nothing like the 3-minute or the 12-minute that's in the actual spec listing.
No, Roy, you're wrong.
Okay, please feel free.
That unit is designed so that if you lose power and you have a roughly 1 kilowatt give or take load, you have a couple of minutes to do an orderly shutdown. If you want to use it to run power through a long time with a lower power load, the numbers Craig is seeing is the voltage, current, power that his computer is drawing out of the battery, and that gives an estimate, but it's always a rough estimate, that's why it varies all over the place. Each time it recalculates it, it does it differently, but it gives an estimate of how long it's good for at that load, which is much less than the design load. And by the way, rechargeable batteries are definitely, you say it sounds like a square law. It may be square law, but it's definitely not linear. Rechargeable batteries are usually specified at the 1-hour discharge rate. And if you go above it, it's not remotely linear, if you're longer. So the idea being, if you're running a battery at 1/10 of its rate, it'll last a lot longer, well, more than 10 times longer. If you're running it 10 times, it'll last a lot less than a 10th. Got that?
Comment?
KC2FYJ, also a comment.
No, I agree with you. Discharge of rechargeable batteries is dependent upon discharge rate. If you want to pull out the most watt seconds out of a battery, you want to discharge it over a week and a half. If you want to have terrible numbers of energy capacity, you do it very, very, very quickly. Also, the voltage inevitably will drop below the point that most electronic circuits will be able to boost them back up, and it'll fail on that level as well. So rechargeable batteries, I agree, are a very complicated thing.
Comment KT2OGB.
Comment KT2FYJ.
Okay, first Craig, then Harry. Craig, what would you like to comment about this?
Okay, Okay, I'm looking at the percentage, and I'm seeing some red flags immediately. As soon as I toggled over to the percentage, it was at 93%, and it's only been a minute and a half, and it's down to 85%.
Sounds right to me.
Yeah, you have to understand that that lead-acid cell battery doesn't have that much capacity. It's rated as a 12-volt, 9-amp-hour battery. So, as Ed pointed out, I mean, there are different types of UPSs out there with different capacities, and the different capacities kind of lend themselves to different strategy. Your UPS is really meant to soft land your computer. Gives you a couple of minutes to save your files, close down properly, and shut things down. Matter of fact, there's a lot of software and UPSs that plug into each other where it will automate that process, that when the power dies, it won't just sit there humming. It'll close everything, save everything, and do a nice, clean shutdown. Harry, you wanted to say something as well.
Yeah, once again, from the web page for that UPS, there's a tab indicating runtime, and it shows a nice graph of if you're drawing 100 watts, how long your runtime is. If you're drawing 200 watts, 300 watts. At 100 watts, the runtime is about 75 minutes. At 200 watts, the runtime is about 40 minutes. At 300 watts, it's about 25 minutes. At 500 watts, it looks like it's about 10 minutes. So it's a very rapid curve that then very slowly shallows out once you're down around 2 or 3 minutes of operating time from about 600 watts onward, 500 watts onward. KC2FYJ, back to net.
Okay, thanks, Harry. I mean, that makes a great deal of sense. As I said, for the most part, especially with a computer that you have, I'm sure it's at least a 500 or 600 watt tower. So it's not going to kind of give you the duration. So I'm thinking that the output time intervals that it seems to give you are rather optimistic, to say the least.
I unplugged something from the tower. I just unplugged my wireless phone pad.
Okay, I don't think that's going to make a major difference. Most of the power probably is your tower and your graphic card and all the other nice things that make it go fast.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. And it says I've got 31 minutes, and I just lost a bar, actually. It's got 4 bars left. Let's see here. I'm using my toe to scroll through. 73% is what I'm at now, and I've got 4 out of 5 bars left.
Wait a minute, Craig. Does it mention watts, KWVA? What's that reading?
Stand by, Ed. Let me look. 33 minutes, 0 volts, 0 hertz, 120 volts, 60.0 hertz, 0.162 KW. I don't know what that is. 182 VA, 178, 177, 175, 176. Anything, what does that mean to you, Roy? KD2OGB.
It's drawing about 150 watts on a 100 watt hour battery.
UPS and the load.
Okay, as Ed mentioned, the KW is kilowatts, the VH is volt amperes.
Okay, also, I'm going to time something here. I need my watch. Bear with me here, you guys.
In the meantime, what is the distance between UPS and the load?
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
Yeah, let them keep an eye on time left. And if that's expiring faster than real time, which I assume it will be if he's got an issue, Yeah, the battery is, you know, when it's fully charged, the voltage might be good, but it has no capacity in it, so it's going to run out fast. And as it runs out and it sees its half capacity, time to go should change. So its time to go will probably not decline with real time, but be more rapid. So if you just clock that, it might be an indication.
KC2FYJ comment.
Yes, Harry recognized. Yeah, I agree, Lou. Probably what's going on is it's smart enough to read the voltage drop as the lead acid that discharges and recalculate its capacity. Otherwise, it has no real way of telling what its true capacity is in, you know, as time marches. Harry, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I'm going to concur with something that you said a few minutes ago. This is a $100, $150 UPS. It's not intended to keep you up and running for hours in the absence of commercial power. It's intended to let you safely shut things down without losing information until you get power back. If you want to have a UPS that will maintain your power for hours and hours or days on end without electricity, that's going to cost you several thousands and thousands of dollars. It's not going to happen out of a $150 off the commercial store shelf UPS unit.
Or a backup generator.
That's a very good possibility. Also, I got more information. This thing drops down 3% every 1 minute.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, I was asking, what is the distance between the UPS and the load?
I'm going to plug it back in, but it says I've got 28 minutes left.
Okay, Wesley, Craig. Wesley wanted to know the distance that between the UPS and the computer. How long is the power cord?
Probably about 5-6 feet. About 5 feet.
That's according to specification, losing 2% of the power over the distance. The distance is more than you're losing 4% of the power. Now, take it to the time frame for how much you're losing per minute. Attraction.
He's running an amp and a quarter on 15 gauge. That's going to be virtually no loss.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is this is a very useful safety feature, but this is not a survival tool. You shouldn't go into it thinking that in case something happens to your power, you'll somehow get through it with this device. This device, as we mentioned earlier, is just a little safety feature to shut things down in case of power, erratic power or loss of power, and not to run it for X number of minutes, hours, days, weeks. As Harry and Ed commented, that would cost thousands of dollars in massive storage batteries or a generator. I'm sorry, it was mostly noise. If you could either pick up the power output or wiggle the antenna in a slightly different direction. Again, I can't kind of make out. I made out a few words, but I didn't make out much more than that, unfortunately. I'm sorry, you're not quite reaching the repeater. You're mostly noise.
All right, this is the KC2GW, KC2GW, Brooklyn, New York, by Queen Island.
Okay, all I was able to get is you're near Coney Island?
GSL, GSL. My name is Paul. My name is Paul. I know you're here because I wasn't that
same color, but I was there. But now I'm in Brooklyn, back on the island in Brooklyn.
Okay, I only heard the second half of that, and that's because I couldn't really hear it through a repeater. I'm hearing it directly on the input. So if you could repeat yourself on the input, I'll turn that up and I'll listen to that signal. Okay, this is a technical net, by the way, so we do this every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and it goes on until about 11 o'clock p.m. So I wish you well with your radio, sir. Getting back to you, Craig, I'm going to take a look after this to see if there's any such safety feature. My guess for 100 will be interesting to kind of the manual, because it's not in the specs, at least that I can read while I'm trying to listen and click and look and do other things simultaneously. So I will take a look at download the instructions and see if there is a safety feature that under no load it shuts down. But it may just have a timeout feature that if you don't do anything with it, it thinks that it's been knocked on incorrectly. So maybe that's it. Who knows?
Chances are it does shut off if there's no load, because it actually would have shut off by now. I've had this thing unplugged for like 25 minutes. It's plugged back in, and it just went up 1%.
Okay. I mean, it doesn't absolutely prove it, because you pretty much stop the drain, and it's smart enough to realize it senses that you've plugged it back into your utility. I'm sure the indicator is now reading 120 volts input. It's reading a certain amount of watts. It's probably even indicating that it's on a charge cycle for the lead acid battery. So it doesn't definitively prove anything, but the lesson to be pretty much learned for tonight is that not all UPS systems are created equal. Most people can't afford the industrial designs that allow you to stroll down to the basement and make sure that there's fuel in the generator and to have it kick in. So, for the most part, I'm sure it came with some software that it suggested you use for the computer that kind of shuts it down when the UPS tells it that its outside outlet power is gone.
Yes. As a matter of fact, there is a setup so that if it gets low enough, it'll actually save everything and shut off the computer on its own. But, it probably shuts off on its own if it's just on its standby time with no load, because it would have shut off by now, and it hasn't. But now that I've plugged it back in, it's not going to shut off.
Okay. I mean, I know a lot of people who don't use UPSs. Thankfully, UPSs have been slightly more of a pain in my backside than a benefit. I find that I can recall many times because, again, these things usually go by about 2 years, especially if you don't get the freshest lead-acid cell in the bunch. And so I've had a lot of times where it does the self-test and then squeals, and I have to turn off the alarm and remember how to pull out the battery and put in a new battery and figure out how to get rid of the old battery. But I thought it was a good idea at the time, and thankfully I really don't think I've needed it, but it's nice to have just in case.
Sure, I guess you could say that. Anyway, that's all I've got for now. AC2GS, Net Control, KD2OGB. Thank you very much, Roy.
Yeah, to extend it with a new subject to discuss.
I would love to, Wes, but I don't want to delay Andy and Andy's Corner. But we can discuss it on the other side of Andy's Corner.
Okay.
John, the gentleman who wanted to discuss FM antennas, are you still out there?
Papa, you have my question, and I'll stand by and listen to you. Okay. Thank you. The handle's John.
Okay, John. Well, basically, and antennas really, there's nothing special about antennas when you change transmission modes, be it AM, FM, single sideband, CW. The sizes scale up and down depending upon the resonant wavelength, so it's more of a size. Most FM radios in the VHF band, which is apparently what you're most interested in, usually very simple vertical ground plane. Sometimes they're just standard. Sometimes they're loaded with a loading inductor. Some are mag mounted. Some are NL use. Usually I would think that the standard antenna format would be some vertical design.
Okay, I have to stand by because the repeater is, sorry for the repeater to drop for me to pick it up. I notice sometimes I see some FM, I know about the station masters, but I see FM 6 and not like a round, like a vertical little loop upside the antenna on both sides. What is the characteristics between that and a regular station master? Is there more BG gain to that antenna, or is this that's the particular design that maybe the two-way company designed for their particular radios? Or I noticed a lot of them here and there and everywhere. Some are 800 megahertz, some are regular, you know, VHF megahertz. Is that based on territory range or gain range or transmission range? Back to you.
Well, basically, antenna design in general is a compromise between mechanical compactness. You don't want something like a station master on a mobile site because they'll bang into all kinds of things. A station master is stationary. It's stacked and has a higher gain than a simple quarter wave. And a lot of these other extra features in the antennas that you see are designed to offer a little bit of additional pattern compression so that the effective area that you want to push the RF in the right direction. In other words, a theoretical isotropic radiator is like a light bulb. It shines up, it shines right, left, forward, and backwards. What most people want, at least for local UHF, VHF, is for it to just kind of graze the horizon because it's line of sight. So you don't want it pointing straight up because it'll just go right past the ionosphere in outer space. So that's the concept behind all these antennas, is to somehow squeeze the pattern of propagation of the radio frequency waves into a direction that's most useful for how you want to use your radio.
Okay, thank you very much. I kind of figured that, but I just wanted to hear it, somebody saying, just wanted to hear somebody's point of view. I kind of thought it was that way. I just want to, just a question I always wanted to ask, and it dawned on me tonight, I figured let me ask it. All right, back to Net Control, thank you, and you're listening on the side. King Bravo 2, I forgot football.
Okay, very good, John. Yeah, I understand. You want a second opinion. You want to make just sure that you got it right. And yeah, I think you do. Reception. It's all the same type of thing. It's the problem is that we call antennas gain the same way that we call amplifiers gain, but the gain is kind of in space, not really in total amplitude. The antenna doesn't put out more power; it just squeezes it in a much more productive pattern than a light bulb would do it. But thanks for participating, John, and you know where we are. And if you have any questions, so thank you, John. And let me call upon Andy, WA2CDL, for Andy's Corner.
Okay, very good. I'm not sure if you called me before. I was on the phone. So here I am, folks. And welcome to Andy's Corner. My name is Andy. WA2CDL is my call. Okay, so we're going to have some fun for the next few weeks because as I dig into these articles, we could talk a lot about different aspects of impedance matching, and that's the actual name of the topic that I'm going to be talking about this evening and next week and maybe the week after and the week after that and so on, because there's a lot to it. Why we match impedances and what is impedance in the first place and the different methods of how we do it, and there's many, many different methods. And this article that I'm going to be reading basically talks about impedance matching circuits. So if anybody wants to follow along with me, and you know, there's no magic to this. I'm just taking these articles out of QST, either recent ones or ones in the past. And I got QSTs going back to the 1930s, so I can get really into some technical stuff, like we did with decibels. So this one is October 2019, so it's not that old. And again, it's by Ward Silver, N0AX is his call. And he wrote the actual articles on decibels as well, the ones I just was speaking about the past few weeks. So, I see it's 5 to 9. I'm not going to spend that much time tonight. This will be a basic overview of impedance matching. And then the second, another article, which will be in another QST magazine, we'll talk about next week. So at least it's two parts right now. And as we dive into the actual components that are used to match impedances, we can talk about that too, because I have other information to convey. For people who don't know anything about what impedance is and how to match it and so on. So, let me let the repeater drop because I know I'm going to time out. WA2CDO. All right. Okay. And, all right, so here we go. This is what impedance matching means and which circuits do the job. So I'm going to start here, and I'm just reading the article. Again, this is just something you can just follow along. There is some mathematics involved in this first part, but I'll try to stay away from that because, you know, no one's going to be doing math, and you have to visualize some things. But there's as I said, there's a number of different circuits that do matching. And there's also different devices, different components, I should say. The component that does impedance matching, like transformers. You know, everybody heard the word transformer, and what are you actually doing? You're transforming one thing to another. So that's what a transformer does, and transformers are used in some cases to match impedances. In other cases, they are used to produce power, like in a power supply. So we can talk about that too, as time goes on. So Impedance matching is a common topic wherever RF is found. This article will explain what impedance matching means and what we accomplish by doing it, with an overview of the components and circuits that do the job. A future article will cover transmission line techniques, including antenna feed point matching. So we're not going to get into that discussion tonight because transmission lines is another way of matching impedances using various lengths of transmission lines. And also you want to match your transmission line to your antenna because in theory, maximum power occurs when impedances are matched. And that is a common theory which is known and proven. Okay, so it's important to know that when you match impedance, you're transferring the maximum amount of power. Okay, let me let it drop again. All right, excuse my voice, it's a little bit raspy due to some allergies. So here's impedance explained. Most hams are already familiar with mechanical impedance matching. You can think of impedance as the ratio of how hard you push to how much you get. An example of this ratio of torque to the ratio of rotation in response. Now, let me just write this. Let me just read this one more time because I think I missed something. You can think of the impedance as the ratio of how hard you push to how much you get. An example is the ratio of torque to the rate of rotation in response. If a car is just starting to move, high applied torque but slow rotation means the wheels present a high impedance to the drive shaft. At highway speeds, the engine is running at about the same speed, but the wheels are turning a lot faster. The impedance is lower. All right, so that's a sort of a visual example of the way he's describing it. Electrically, voltage is how hard you push, and the resulting current is how much you get. So, electrical impedance, which has the symbol Z, in the formula Z, it corresponds to impedance, is the ratio of voltage V to current I. And the formula actually is Z equals V divided by I. As Z being the impedance, V is being the voltage, and I being the current. And it's measured in units of ohms. So that may be a little bit confusing because you're talking about resistance and you're talking about impedance. Now, impedance is usually used in AC circuits, and resistance is usually used in DC circuits. But I think he's just using this as an explanation to simplify, you know, what we're doing here. All right, at this point, any quick questions? WA2CDM. Okay. Voltage and current can be simple magnitudes like 10 volts or 20 milliamps, so that Z, which is the impedance, equals 10 volts divided by 0.02 amps, which corresponds to 20 milliamps, which makes 500 ohms. So you could say, now again, you know, using this as an example, but basically that's a DC circuit because you're taking a certain voltage and you're dividing it by the current, and you're getting your ohmic value of 500 ohms. Impedance is a little bit more complicated because you're dealing with AC circuits rather than DC circuits, and now you have phase relationships to consider, and that's why I these articles in the future we'll get into that, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So, in an RF system where reactance is usually present, it's important to include phase in the calculation. And that's what I just said. So that impedance becomes a complex number, such as the actual number is 47 minus J 80 ohms, J being the J operator, and I'm not going to explain the whole thing, but the minus sign means capacitive rather than inductive, and the minus 80 is, and that's